Welcome to Opening the Door Podcast. Join me as we unlock the door to our psychic, intuitive, and mediumship abilities. Come along as we explore how to get in touch with our intuition, expand our mediumship, and open plenty of other doors to every aspect of spirituality, consciousness, and magic along the way. Hey, key holders. Today you will hear a conversation that I had all the way back in November with Genevieve, who created a really cool sort of spooky, cryptid, ghost-related tarot deck. So you'll hear Genevieve reference the tarot deck a lot before we actually like touch on it at the end of the podcast. So if you're hearing Genevieve talk about the cryptid and then the card that's associated with it, just know that that's because there is a deck created. I have linked the deck in the show notes for you if you are interested in adding a really cool artistic and a little bit of a spooky deck to your collection. This was a really fun conversation. The way this happened was I wanted to do a cryptid episode in October for Halloween, and the scheduling just simply did not work out for that, partly because Genevieve was working on this deck at the time and just didn't have the time, which I totally respect, and the deck is just came out so cool. So definitely take a look at that, especially if you're a tarot lover or just an artwork lover in general. So I wanted to do a sort of interesting cryptid episode for October for Halloween, and we ended up recording in November, and I'm just bringing you the episode now because the deck is out in the world, and it's always a fine time to talk about cryptids and other interesting stuff like that. I think I'll probably do some sort of other episode, hopefully in October this year, about cryptids, because I think there's so much more to chat about here that we get into sort of the cryptid basics. And yeah, I'm sure you will hear other episodes about this topic as well. Enjoy the episode, and remember, don't be afraid to open your door. Today we're welcoming Genevieve to Opening the Door. Genevieve Barbie Turner is a tarot card illustrator and two-dimensional artist based in Pittsburgh, PA. She creates cursed occult wares, including tarot decks, stickers, and stationery, fine art prints, and other decor inspired by horror stories, folklore, and ghost stories from across history and pop culture. Killer Pancake blends contemporary Appalachia and queer femme identity with a splash of gothic aesthetic. Genevieve, welcome to Opening the Door podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I am so excited to chat with you, just get a little bit sort of into the creepy spooky with you, which I think will be really fun for people to hear also, because I have been sort of fascinated with Appalachia lore and cryptid stuff for a little bit, I have a lot of questions, I have a lot of thoughts, and I'm excited to have you here to chat through all of that.
I'm here to have my brain picked, so I'm excited.
Love it. So, but just to start, so people can get to know you a little bit, can you tell us a little bit about your spiritual journey, how it started, especially with the lens of tarot, since you have, designed a few tarot decks in your day?
Yeah, so my tarot journey actually began when I was probably 8 or 9. I was in the YMCA summer camp in Chesapeake, Virginia, which is close to Virginia Beach. And there was a older girl who had a tarot deck, and I was just enthralled. I was like, oh my goodness, I need to know what that is. But she was very, what we would call now gatekeepy, right? And was very this is really special and you can't touch it. And I have to do all these different sort of rituals around it. And so I was like, wow, okay, that's a lot. So I can't, it felt very unattainable for me. And I was raised in an area that was very, very religious, but not the religion that I was raised in. And so, that feeling of otherness or outsideness, or this inability to kind of penetrate into a spiritual space, was always kind of a conflicted thing for me. So I was raised Catholic in an area where most people were Southern Baptist, Pentecostal, Seventh-day Adventist, pretty hardcore born again Christian. That was like the big thing that was happening. I remember they had like at my high school, they had like people doing like prayer circles, and I remember one person in particular would talk about Father God, and I remember thinking like that is so weird. No offense to anybody that's like Christian or whatever. I just was like, okay. And Catholicism was not some like it was. I was raised, but it was more this connection to something older than it was so much. It was like a way chiller version of Catholicism than what I was exposed to when I moved to Pittsburgh. So, and it was mystical and it was kind of spooky. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So, like, move forward. I, gone to art school. And didn't really have much of a spiritual practice, but was very curious about the idea of I was a printmaker. I am a printmaker, and I love this idea of the multiple. And I loved the idea of like a deck of cards and how the cards speak to one another, dependent upon the order that they're placed in. And I think every artist has this dream of making a tarot deck. And so one day I just called up a friend who'd been reading cards for 15 years at that point. And I was like, will you talk to me about tarot? And she was like, absolutely. And it just started this journey of really understanding what the tarot was, where it came from, a lot of the ideas around it. And it kind of made me think of that girl from YMCA camp of, she kind of broke down. My friend Erin broke down all of the stuff that this young lady had told me about before. And so I was able to kind of get on the other side of it. And that just started my obsession with like reading about the history of tarot and starting to use it for my own kind of spiritual practice, which I'll be honest, like I consider myself an atheist, but really what I kind of basically like the way I see it, like I am not God, right? Like, and I think a lot of my life was spent around attempting to bring order to things and realizing that I can unburden myself from that feeling and kind of leave it go. So I read a lot of like Sean Carroll, who wrote The Big Picture. He's a theoretical physicist. And in getting into that, at the same time as getting into tarot and getting into chaos theory and into the many worlds theory, science inherently becomes a little spooky. So I find myself kind of in between these different sort of worlds and meshing them together, taking what works and leaving the rest. And now I use tarot mostly as a self-reflective tool. And I think a lot about the fool's journey. And I think a lot about the things that the fool kind of is exposed to, picks up, has to go through, which is why in every deck that I have done for the past decade, I am the fool in every card. So, yeah, that kind of brings us up to today. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Amazing. I totally agree with you that when we sort of start looking at science and a lot of different theories, it does get a little spooky. It gets a little spooky and it gets a little magical too. I really feel like there's so much overlap between science and magic. Like, I don't know if that's just me being like annoying and optimistic or something, but I just really find that like science kind of feels like magic to me. Like, if you showed somebody 600 years ago, this looks like, and I'm holding up my phone, by the way, because we don't have video, but I'm holding up my phone. Like, that's magic. We talk to each other, and me and you even, we're miles and miles away from each other right now, and we're talking through a screen. Like, that's magic to me, you know? Like, it's magic that's explained, obviously, through science. And yeah, so I don't know. I just want to say that because I totally agree that science can get a little spooky, it can get a little magical, and I absolutely love it.
Well, I think specifically the thing I'm really fascinated about right now is the idea of like, you can either observe something or you can like kind of like see it within like space or measure its speed, right? There's like a theory around that. I'm not an actual scientist, so like I just read things and sort of absorb what I like about them. But and I was thinking a lot about that. It gets almost philosophical, right? Like where I start to how does that reflect on like sort of my experience as a human being within this earth, right? And I find that like I have struggled a lot in the past of like attempting to make sense of things, attempting for things to follow a particular path. And now I don't like people would say one manifests things or one turns it over to the universe or Jesus take the wheel, if you will. And instead it's more not holding on to things that I cannot carry, right? Like That's what I think a lot about. Like, how do I let go of the things that I think I actually have some sort of control over? And it is such a lie, right? That idea of control. And when I've done that, it's actually sort of unburdened me in a way that allows other things to take place, right? And like, if we're going to talk about magic, to me, that is magic. That is spiritual, right? Because I had to learn that. I had to accept that, and I had to practice that. And I still have to practice that because, unfortunately, I still find myself wanting to, like today's a great example. I was like, oh, this is going to happen, then this is going to happen, then this is going to happen. And it's like, no, no. I can do the best I can. I can show up and attempt my best, but what's going to happen is going to happen. And I need to just accept that. So, yeah.
I totally agree. And the other thing you said at the sort of beginning, explaining your journey so far, is that, and you just mentioned it again, and so I just want to touch on it because I think I totally agree, is that unburdening yourself of things you can't control, and just like that has given me so much freedom. And I was just talking about this on Instagram the other day, actually, but just, yeah, realizing like there's so little that you actually have control over. And I hope instead of stressing you out as you're listening, that that actually brings you some freedom, because it just has brought me a lot of freedom. I don't know if that's just in general, like maybe me and your personalities just have an ability to accept that and it feels free. But yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to mention that because, or like highlight that you said that, because I totally agree.
I had to learn that, and I had to suffer a while in order to do that. Somebody told me recently, they were like, what is it? Like, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. And I was like, oof, like, or the suffering is pain plus resistance. And I was like, damn, oh, ugh, gross. Don't do that. Like, oh, it's pointing me out, and it's true. I think that is like kind of the root of it. Like, if I look at love and suffering as my, best teachers, right? Like, sometimes I do need to suffer a little bit before I finally get it. So if you're struggling with that, it's okay. Like, just attempt to fit in it. Like, any, I think a lot of the thing that is really key, I think, to my practice is realizing that things take time, and I cannot demand things of the universe, right? I cannot demand things. I cannot just like know everything. Like, I think tarot is an excellent example of that. Like, when you sit down with the tarot deck and you're new to tarot, it feels like so much. And then it's like, no, you just need to spend time with it, and you cannot speed that process up. It really just takes time. So, yeah.
I totally agree. I just love the wisdom that you've brought in like the first 10 minutes of this conversation. I love it so much. So let's get into some lore here. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience living in sort of the Appalachia area and sort of like what your experience has been like so far in that area?
Yeah. So my mother is from Natrona Heights, which is like 30 minutes up 28, if you know anything about Pittsburgh, for us local folks. And so I grew up coming up here since I was a little kid. And so the idea, and it always, like, even though I grew up in an area that has a lot of history, there is a spookiness, there is a gravity to this region. And the longer that I've lived here now for 20 years, which is wild. I came up here to go to school, and I stayed. And as I have, like, living in Pittsburgh and being a Pittsburgher is all about history. It is all about knowing history. It's all about knowing what used to be there. Like, history, like, Pittsburgh is ghosts, right? Like, whether that's like giving directions based on what used to be there, which is a very classic Pittsburgh thing, or the way that the Yinzer accent, like, is kind of tucked into these little hollows and these little hollers, there is this blood and sweat that has soaked into this land that I think is felt by people without them even completely understanding what that is. Pittsburgh sits at a convergence of three rivers, which is inherently like a spiritual sort of space, right? And has been for the people that lived in Pittsburgh before, white colonizers came to this area. And was also a place where many different people kind of converged, right? And so just the basic history, the basic realities of Pittsburgh are inherently ooky, spooky, and filled with weight and meaning. And then you add the stories that we tell around campfires, or the warnings that we give people, and it kind of I don't know, it just adds even more to it. Like I once went to my friend's house. She had bought a house in Highland Park, and it was this beautiful old house. And she was like, "Yeah, we just keep like stripping all this paint off of it, and under every layer of paint is another layer of paint, and it's a different, weirder color." And I was like, "That is like the perfect metaphor for Pittsburgh." Like there is just another, you know. And I think the other aspect of that is when Europeans started to come through this area, it wasn't just one dominant group, right? There were people that came from France and then England and then Germany and then Ireland and Italy. And now the newer waves are coming from India and from Southeast Asia in general. And with all of that is this kind of coming together of lore. So we have like the women in white, you know, that stands on the side of the road. We have the, I mean, anything around labor, right? The Green Man is a great example of a local thing, which is actually based on a real person that then became a legend and then spawned other legends in other areas, right? And so, yeah, this there is this mix of history of reality that gets bent and turned, just like the really crooked streets of Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh doesn't make any sense. Like it's so easy to get lost and like to wander around and accidentally wind up on the road. Like it is just such a strange sort of little place that it of course like ghost stories are going to get caught it up in these streets. So yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I will say that, and I know I mentioned this earlier, but like, yeah, Appalachia is a huge area, the mountains. So we, if you're sort of like wondering about the geography of it, starts way down in kind of like the south, right?
Georgia. Georgia all the
Georgia,
way to
yeah.
Maine.
And it goes all the way up, and it's so full of little pockets, like you said, of communities. And one of the first things that started when I made my TikTok, like I don't know why, but some of the first stuff that the algorithm was serving me was just creepy ass Appalachia lore and stories. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm just a person who I get easily freaked out. I don't watch horror movies because I can't unsee them, like that type of thing. And I was like, I'm taking in all this content, like I am freaked out. So so this is sort of what it got me interested in, like what is a cryptid and like how does this lore all come together? So can you define for us like your definition of what a cryptid is?
So, okay, I apologize ahead of time for how long-winded I can be, and this is also going to be one of those moments, so I'm sorry.
No worries.
So to me, this is just my personal impression. I'm not going by any like definition online. What I think of as a cryptid is I think a cryptid is a creature that explains a phenomena that people otherwise cannot figure out before aliens became popular, essentially. Because when I look at the cryptids, this is just based on my observation of the cryptids that I've seen that are popular in this region. They are always linked to some sort of phenomena. Like the Mothman is essentially a death omen, right? And that just that they happen to see something that seems unexplainable. Maybe a small group or a rumor essentially starts, and it all seems to coincide with something terrible happening, right? And so, in the case of the Mothman, it was, you know, a bridge collapse and or like a mass casualty event, essentially. For something like the Flatwoods Monster, which is in West Virginia, there again was some sort of either meteorological or I don't want to say like space event, like a meteor event that took place, and people swear that when they went in to go investigate it, they saw XYZ thing, right? And so it's this attempt to kind of bring reason. The other cryptid I have in mind is it's called the Blue Devil Dog. And so and that was this attempt, it was a mass hysteria to try to explain like why certain things were happening in these regions. And what's interesting specifically about the region of Appalachia that I focus on, which is not like, yes, the range goes from Georgia all the way up to Maine. That's where the mountain range goes. In talking with people about this deck, a lot of people had initially kind of thought further south. And I was like, no, we're looking specifically at West Virginia. We're looking at Western Pennsylvania, and we're looking at East Ohio, which does have a little bit of stuff in there. And there is this co like coinciding of like loneliness of people sort of, hunkering down into these cold, intense communities with like lack of resources. And then of course, what's going to happen, right? Like you start talking about things that kind of grow from there, right? There's also a Yeti that I found, which was really cool. That was also in West Virginia. And there's a goat man that's, well, the whole thing with the goat man started in one area and then now has like migrated to another. And then it just sort of begins to spread. And yeah, so I think of them in the same way as with ghost stories. It becomes this, I don't like when I say mass hysteria event, I don't, that sounds negative. I don't mean it in a negative way. I think it's more this kind of way of explaining something that doesn't make sense. And somehow nature gets involved where they're like, well, I saw this creature with these big eyes and this, you know, whatever. And I think that's exciting and cool. And I also think that the reason that they've kind of had a resurgence recently is because even if you don't believe in a cryptid, you know, it doesn't really matter. I think they're exciting, they're fun, they're interesting, and they allow our imagination to take on this whole other like level of, I don't know, excitement, of awareness. I don't know. I think like the Mothman is exciting. The Mothman is cool. The Goatman, a goat man wandering in the woods, like that is rad, right? Like that's just exciting. So yeah, it's like a collective effort to sort of figure things out, I guess.
Yeah, I like what you said about sort of, yeah, it sort of allows your mind to, it even I would say allows your mind to explore what might be possible, you know? I think as human beings, we like to definitely try to figure it all out and put it all in their neat little boxes and everything like that. And I think it's like, I don't know, I just have this thought of like, why would we know every single thing at this point in time? You know, why would we have every single creature in our dictionary at this point in time? You know, like there's so much to discover. There's so much of the ocean that we haven't even discovered yet. So yeah, I like that idea of it sort of just giving your mind somewhere to explore as well. So what are some of you've mentioned a few cryptids so far. So what are some of your favorite cryptids or cryptid stories?
I'll be honest, I found the ones that people brought to me that I'd never heard of to be the most fascinating. Specifically, I brought up the Goatman because he kind of is my favorite, especially because it doesn't really have. So what is fun about cryptids in general is that it's fun to say yes, right? It's fun to like say yes and kind of see where your imagination takes you. And with the Goatman, there wasn't a lot of story around it. There wasn't like a lot of like origin story for Goatman. And so that allowed me, that's why it's the Falling Tower, because honestly, the whole story is centered around there's this random goat man out there with an axe and he's gonna, you know, so of course it goes to, of course I'm threatened and of course he's gonna come get me, you know? So I used him as the model for the tower because it's almost like that Monty Python joke of like, no one, you know, knows when the Spanish Inquisition is coming or whatever. Wow, I really messed that up. I'm sorry, all Monty Python fans, but no one expects the Spanish Inquisition. Okay, cool. There we go. So it's very that, and it kind of doesn't really make a lot of sense. Like it's not like in this region, there was a lot of like people that raised goats. You know? Like I'm sure there are some, but it's just not, I don't know. It just seems very random. And like I said, it's actually initially started as a cryptid in Western Maryland, which is like theoretically outside of the bounds of my scope of research, but it was somebody who was living in this amazing corridor of between Pittsburgh and Erie, which to me is truly the most magical, wild place. There's so much random ghost stories and witch things that I would find there versus there's a lot of stuff in Pittsburgh, but the stuff out there was just fantastic. And the goat man kind of made a resurgence, like a kind of popped up in that area. And yeah, I just thought it was just so fun and like interesting. And I could kind of play with it and do more. I think it's better than cryptids that have more rules or are like, maybe this is the kind of counterculture person in me, but it's so much more interesting than the ones that are super popular right now, which is the Mothman, right? The Skwonk is another one that I had not heard of. Yeah. Have you heard of the Skwonk?
No, I have not.
Okay. So this is fascinating. All right. So the Skwonk is an apocryphal folklore tale. The Skwonk is said to like roam the hemlock woods Which is basically like in that center bit between central Pennsylvania and western Pennsylvania. So think like Bedford, Somerset-ish, maybe a little bit further north. And it is this ugly, disgusting creature that wanders around and just feels sorry for itself and cries and cries and cries. And in the light of the moon, because it can see itself in pools of water, it slows down. And that's the way that hunters are supposed to be able to catch it. But when you catch it in a net, it just dissolves into a puddle of tears. And it became the devil card because it's this very like self-obsessed, stuck individual, right? That's what I think of when I think of the squonk. So it's the ugliest creature alive. And it's just so sad about it. But it turns out that the folklore book that it is included in is the first and only real telling of that thing. It is not actually documented as being a story that anybody told anybody before that time. So, which I think is amazing. So, the amount of fake folklore that has now become real folklore is unbelievable. And it kind of happened around like sort of the tail end of that spiritualist movement and that kind of rise of like people wanting to kind of collect quote unquote folklore. There's literally, it's an apocryphal story. Like there's no like actual evidence that any hunter told this story in order to trick other hunters, which is what was kind of alluded to in the book. Isn't that fascinating?
Fascinating. That is
Yeah.
so fascinating. Do you think that cryptids always have negative intentions? I think when we have lots of dialogue around cryptids, there's always like sort of the negative intention. They're trying to lure you somewhere, they're trying to hurt you or steal something from you. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that that is what horror and folklore and these ghost stories all initially start as. They start as warnings. Like they are a reflection of what our culture is struggling with. And so this idea of, I mean, look at even just like Red Riding Hood, right? Like what is the big bad wolf other than, essentially a warning against trusting strange men, right? Because of what they could do to you. And so I think that it initially starts as that. Again, this idea of the Mothman being a death omen or the Yeti being something that would hunt you within a cave or a mine. All of that makes complete sense when you lived in a time where it was extremely easy to die of the elements. It was very easy to die, period, right? Like there was just so many things that could, So, people that took maybe a little bit of extra care or were a little bit more prepared tended to, if they were lucky, right, like get on by. And I think it helps to explain, helps us cope with sort of the trials of life. That being said, I think what's cool now about cryptids, I think there's like a then and now, right? And I think now cryptids are this fun cultural anecdote, right? Like, especially something like the Mothman, like I find that people get really into going to the festival, and it's a bringing together of community around what was once the scary idea or the scary concept. And now you have like Mothman plushies, and I actually found a squonk like little figurine. And yeah, they kind of become these like mascots of our region in a lot of ways. And I think that's a good thing. Things that people are kind of being centered around in a positive way, I think are inherently good. So.
Cool. Do you have any personal cryptid stories yourself, especially as you were creating this deck? Did you feel like anything sort of energetically popped up for you, or that you were more aware when you were out and about, or anybody in your family and friend circle who might have a little cryptid story of their own?
So not so much cryptid stories, more being out in the woods and realizing like that feeling of like, I'm not alone. And I'm also not, this is, this is a different level, right? So my husband's from Maine and we spent some time out in the woods there. And yeah, I have a lot of fear of bears. So that does not answer your question at all, but I have a lot of fear of bears. And especially recently, like there's been some like instances of people with like really good, what is it, like knowledge about how to survive and how to manage things like that coming up against an overly aggressive animal, and obviously not winning there. So I would think, like, today, the things that I think about when if cryptids were using the same method of teaching me something, right, of warning me of something, it would be that, I am not at the top of the food chain, if that makes sense. Like, to be aware and to be, that I can just easily be hunted, right? Like, whether that be, that's not to say that I don't want to sound like I'm like making animals seem horrible, like we need to do something about it, right? That's not at all what I'm saying. More that to respect nature, basically. Yeah, as far as my friends and family, oh my gosh, when I was making this deck, I had so much of it, and the reason actually took longer than it normally does. I had so many people say, is the squonk in there? Is the Mothman in there? I had a couple people actually ask about the Goatman, which I was wild. I was like, wow, okay, I ha absolutely have to make sure that it goes in there. But that was kind of the big thing. People would bring things to me and say, like, I'm a really big fan of XYZ thing, and I'd be like, okay, I will make sure that it gets in there. And so having that collaborative experience, I think, was it's a very essential to my process. So I feel bad. I feel like I let you down. Like, I don't have a lot of like cryptid stories,
This is okay. You didn't let me know. This has been a really fascinating conversation. And so I guess my next question for you is, do you think that, like, so you sort of talked about how, these things, these legends and cryptids sort of started as warnings, which I totally agree with. Like, there's like we got to survive, or the human race feels motivated to survive in the elements and stuff like that. So that makes sense to me. Do you believe that some cryptids are real? Because there's plenty, people will tell their stories. There's plenty all over Reddit. There's sort of these experiences that people have that don't feel explainable. What are your thoughts on sort of if this is real, or if we're all sort of maybe we're collectively creating them with our energy?
So this is not a cop-out answer. This is really how I feel about this, as well as folklore in general. I don't think it matters if it's real. I don't think it matters if it's real. I think this idea, first of all, I think like debunking things is kind of boring, right? I don't know if you follow Hannah the Horrible on YouTube. She's really fun.
Oh,
She makes
cool.
interesting videos, and she'll do like ghost story stuff, and she'll talk about things being debunked or not, and kind of get into some of that, and that's fine. But I think like when we're sitting around the campfire, when we're and TikTok is the new campfire, right? Like, this idea that TikTok is new, is it's just a new format, right? Like, it's not a new concept. I think and this idea of like these niche cultures that are created in these online communities, it's essentially almost this a similar form of, for lack of a better word, tribalism that I think we inherently as humans do, right? I think it's just a part of being human, and part of that is sharing stories. And I think that is how we connect with each other. That is how we learn from each other. And so, if members of my community are excited about a particular entity, whether that's Mary Black, which is essentially our version of Bloody Mary, whether that is the concept of the Grimm, right? Like the Grimm that lives inside of a cemetery, whether that is the Mothman, it doesn't matter. I don't care. I don't really care if it's real. What I care about is like connecting with people in a meaningful way and learning more about them and sort of how they see themselves within a community. I think where it gets dangerous is when people use any kind of ideology, whether that's like, their belief in something, or, a political sort of aspect, to weaponize it against other people, right? And to exploit or take advantage of other people. And I think that that's also, unfortunately, an aspect of being human, right? So, yeah, I had this conversation when I started making tarot decks. We were talking about, I had a lot of people ask me to do readings for them, which I refuse to do. I only do readings for my friends. I don't take money for reading cards. It's just my personal thing. And as I have friends that I refer people to that will read cards for a fee. But it sort of scared me, like some of the interactions that I had with people, and some of the intensity of those conversations. And I didn't enjoy that. It was like, it felt too like much of a responsibility, I guess. And so I don't want to do that. My job, I see my job is to kind of look at culture, observe culture, react to culture, and create something beautiful out of what I think makes us beautiful, which are the stories that we tell each other about who we are. I think that's good. So yeah, I had a conversation with somebody about, I was like, the truth is, first of all, in many ways, like subjective, and the truth doesn't actually have an impact on the here and the now with like whether it's using tarot, as a reflective medium, or if it's again like sitting around the campfire and just connecting and sharing stories and keeping each other up, or spooking my little nieces, you know what I mean, a little bit. So that's not relevant, I guess.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for sharing your perspective on that. Well, you mentioned your ver I think you said Mary Black. Am I getting that right? Can you tell us the legend?
This poor woman, she was a real person. Mary Black was a real person. She was an immigrant from Ireland, and she lived in this region of Western Pennsylvania that's still pretty, I would say, remote or small town, if you will. And basically, she was a woman who had her own opinions about things, and she had a large family that, she lived her life raising, et cetera, doing her own thing. But I think because of her attitude, or at least from what I can glean from what people have said about her, people just didn't like her. So she gets labeled as a witch, right? And she becomes the town witch. So when she dies, people start assuming that her headstone, or that there's something like wrong with her body, that she'll come back to life essentially. And so they start to do things like stealing her headstone and taking it. And like, so her headstone was like stolen a bunch of times, like it's thrown down by a river. People are just wild, right? So now like the local historical society owns it and like keeps it like locked up because it became this sort of like thing to take it. And if you see a picture of her, I mean, she looks really intense, but also, I think about the time that she's living, it kind of makes sense that she's not like, I don't know, a beauty queen, whatever. But the legend is that when you say her name in the mirror alone, that she will essentially, like her ghost will come up either from below or through the mirror and scratch your face off. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was like, that's amazing. So, or she'll come in the middle of the night while you're asleep and scratch her face off. So, which is amazing. I was like, that is the coolest thing. I hope that like when I die that I have a legend like that. Like that is like you become immortal. And that was one of the things I realized about a lot of these legends is that in periods of history where we don't write down women's names, where we don't write down people of color's names, we put them in our folklore. Like that's where their names are hidden, right? Which is really wild. So yeah, that's Mary Black.
Yeah, I would scratch people's faces off if they were that mean to me too. So,
Right?
yeah, I kind of like that. I kind of like it. It's like, I don't know. It's like she's living on, even though you all hated her. She's living on because of you. You know what I mean? Like, and I kind of like that because it's like she's taking up a lot of your mental space, isn't she?
It's
Like, I don't know.
true.
There's something about that that I like revenge-wise that I enjoy.
Yeah. And that one's from Newcastle, PA. So, and there's like new what's what I love about doing research for this stuff is like a lot of the stuff that I found these stories in were like newspapers, right? Like they're
Wow.
written down in newspapers. Yeah, the Green Man written down in a newspaper. Like it's amazing. I love it. So yeah, she's still newsworthy.
Yeah, absolutely. So cool. So obviously we've sort of touched on your deck a bunch throughout this interview, but can you tell us a little bit more about is it out yet and where people can get their hands on it and a little bit more about the creation of it?
Absolutely. So this was created actually from my newsletter, which sounds crazy, but it's true. I asked people, I was like, I want to do another deck. I want to do it about, I had, in previous decks, I had done things about Pittsburgh specifically. And I was like, I kind of want to expand, but if I expand, like, what am I going to talk about? And I kind of put it out there. I was like, what about folklore? What about ghost stories? And there were other options. I don't even remember what the other options were, which goes to show that they weren't that great. And It like people, it was like 100% were like folklore ghost stories. So that was sort of the direction that it started in, because I am truly a history nerd. Like that is where things kind of come down. But as a student of history, you start to realize like who actually writes it down, how it's actually recorded. It's not this like cut and dry black and white sort of thing. And I love that about it. So that's sort of the idea, like where it all kind of originated. And I started working on it and researching it for a few years. So it is done doing right now. I'm actually waiting for a proof that's supposed to come this week. And then once I approve that, I can order the 1,000 decks that I was able to purchase through the Kickstarter. So as it'll get here, hopefully with before 2023, maybe early 2024, and I'll start shipping it out. Yeah, you can find it there online. So go to my website. It'll either you'll be able to pre-order it or you'll be able to like get it. I am also wholesaling it through a few different stores. So there's one in Massachusetts. There's one here. There's at least two here in Pittsburgh that are going to be carrying it, if not more. So yeah. And then I also, for those that are here, if you know of a shop or if you own a shop and you want to carry it, I will have things through Fair, which is the online wholesaler. So, because that'll just be easy. So, right now, people can order prints from the deck, and I'm updating my Instagram all this week with sort of illustration, like the illustrations from the deck and talking about their stories, etc. But everything is all through my website. Yes.
Amazing.
Thanks.
So cool. Well, this has been such a fun conversation. I love the perspective that you bring to just this topic overall, and other good little beginning conversation as well. Genevieve, thank you so much for coming on and sharing about your deck and your thoughts on cryptids and all the good stuff. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you love the podcast, don't forget to rate and leave a review wherever you listen. Follow me on Instagram at Opening the Door Podcast and visit my website, openingthedoorpodcast.com, to explore my reading offerings, digital downloads, and more. Plus, subscribe to my email list to be the first to know about OTD news and offerings.